And there is no reason on earth why Prince Charming cannot walk through our front door.
Hello.
Cheryl, believe me, I am not sick, and there is nothing in this place that will make me sick.
Hello, girls.
Well, who knows who will show up this year?
I know. The same people who show up every year. People I didn't want to see then, people I don't want to see now, and people I don't ever want to see again.
Hello.
Nothing can depress me once I put my mind to it.
Hello.
That keeps running. They'll be coming through here like termites.
Hello.
Everybody, and welcome to the Nightfly. I'm Dave Juska. Welcome to the Christmas time edition of the Nightfly, where we always play one of the, well, the, what I think is the greatest Christmas album of all time. And I even said that in front of the late Adam Schlesinger, even though we were promoting his Monkees Christmas album, the Vince Guaraldi Trio, A Charlie Brown Christmas, one of the greatest Christmas albums. I've been listening to it all year long. And why would the podcast be any exception? It truly brings in the holiday spirit. It's terrific. How you doing, everybody? It's me, Dave Juska, live recording on Monday, December 14th, is coming out Tuesday, December 15th. Yes, Monday this week because, I got to tell you, I mean, I'm not doing anything. I had nothing to report, nothing to talk about. You know, I was like, well, let me wait at least. And Saturday, I'm going to my mother's. He's like, there's something I can report. I mean, that's how bad it is. Oh, and today's a horrible day in New York City. I mean, I'm not just talking about weather-wise, which it is. It's not a fun day. It's you know, rainy and cold and awful. And yesterday was a beautiful day. Definitely having trouble with my chair because I'm losing weight, but then, you know, I eat so poorly on the weekends, you know, to make up for it because, you know, I don't want to lose that much weight. I don't want to be a girl. But I think I eat so much during the weekends, my chair just falls down. I'm so fat. But no, I keep losing a pound or two every time I go to my mom's, is where I weigh myself. And I can't decide whether to re-up the Nutrisystem diet or not. But the fact of the matter is, not only does it save money, I really would have to work the numbers, which is something I don't care to do. But it also provides stability and something to do on Monday or Tuesday when, you know, I'm just sitting at home concentrating on the show or whatever. I just can't make up my mind. I know I'll eat poorly if I'm not on it, but I think I'm sick of being on it. But again, I'm not sure what the alternative is. So I pushed it. I'm making a decision later in the month. Anyway, hello everybody and welcome to our regular show. I am so when I sit in my bedroom where I do the normal audio podcast, I'm so used to now being in my living room doing the show on Zoom. I was like, should I just do the show on Zoom? I mean, I feel so comfortable at the table in front of the camera now just talking. It's so weird because I just never thought that would be the case. But you know, they got a nice filter the camera. But I hope you enjoyed the 300th episode. Again, I just wasn't sure if I'd be able to put it out in time or what it was going to be or whatever, and I'm glad I did. So here's the story for the upcoming weeks. And hello, everybody, by the way, and very nice to see everybody. In fact, why don't we just put on a little bit of the Vince Giraldi throughout the, you know, my... I don't know. Can I talk to her over it? I don't know. Sometimes it's difficult. I don't know. I can never make up my mind whether I can concentrate during it or not. Oh, actually, an ad came up anyway, so... No, I can't concentrate with the music playing. I thought I could have it playing throughout, but I can't. So, sorry, that was my big plan today, and I'm like, I can't do it. I can't concentrate with the music playing in the background. It's too distracting. I can't even read when music's playing in the background. You know, I have to have everything quiet. I try, but I can't do it. I just can't concentrate on two things at the same time. I'm not a multitasker. I'm always surprised when I see women, well, girls, back in the day or now, when they're just in their rooms listening to music and studying. I'm always like, wow, I wish I could do that. I couldn't possibly concentrate and listen to music at the same time. But maybe I'll put it on later. I don't know. I can't decide. Anyway, the important thing is that here's the show coming up. Here's the story with the Nightfly. Again, just thank you so much, Patreon subscribers. This is amazing. I'm so glad some of you decided to sign up, as you said, you know, do it. And then a lot of you signed up, and I really appreciate it, and it's really wonderful. And again, I just hope I can bring you your money's worth. You know, now, for even the Bernie level, it's funny every time for me, the $3 level, you know, you get the podcast early. Well, it's not going to be that early this week. Sometimes I've been putting it out on Saturday nights, which is exciting. But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, that's why I was like thinking, well, like, I don't know, if I record on Monday, nobody gets it early, and that's what you pay for. But, you know, what are you going to do? Sometimes you got to record it on Monday. I mean, I would record it on Sunday normally if it wasn't during football season. But Sunday is a wash during football season, as it was yesterday. Ugh. Let's not discuss it. Even though everything went like clockwork. I did the Sunday 10 a.m. show. I talked on the phone for a half hour. I took a nap. I turned it on. I watched the first, you know, games. I lost everything. And then I went to meet Memo at the sushi place in Queens that we go to, where we've got 3 weeks in a row. It's been great. And he's like, you know, I can come into Manhattan. I'm like, I kind of like the adventure of getting to you, which I do enjoy. And it was a pleasant night last night. It got colder later. I was prepared. But I enjoy, you know, I enjoy it and I don't enjoy it at the same time. Like, when it's happening, I don't so much enjoy it, but the thought of it. So, you know, I have to take the city bike over the Queensboro Bridge and then find a Revel scooter somewhere in Queens and try and find it, match it up to a city bike station, so I don't have to walk completely far just to switch vehicles so I can get to Memo's. He has told me he lives in Sunnyside, Queens, and they don't have a city bike racks there anywhere. It's weird. He told me they're coming, I don't know, in April. That's no help now. So then I can probably, if I'm on an electric bike, I can just ride to his house the whole way. But right now, there is no other way to get there except to transfer, like a subway, to the Revel scooter, and then I can park right near the restaurant. And it is, and once I'm parked there, I'm like, yeah, that was fun. And then when I go home, it's fun. You know, getting on the bike and leaving. And then when I'm driving and looking for an electric bike again, I'm like, this is annoying. And then I get on the bike and then it's always cold. And then you got to go over the bridge. And it seems like it should be fun, but it's always a little chilly, I guess, on a nice night. But still, that Queensboro Bridge is, it's just not a lot of laughs. You know, it's very narrow and a little scary, and there's a whole bunch of delivery guys, I guess, going over on their motorcycles, which is not cool. And it's very scary if you're a pedestrian walking across. You know, I've done it before, and my neighbor Michelle and I have spoken about how kind of terrifying it is with all that bike traffic and electric bike traffic, and I guess that includes myself. But, you know, I'm not on a technically electric bike. I'm on just a pedal assist bike, which is a lot different. But I don't know what to say. I don't want to, I mean, I do want to be like an old man and say, what the hell's the matter with these kids? But how are people supposed to get by? I don't know. And again, I'm trying to make it a full year with no taxis, no cabs. I just said that. No taxis, no subways, no buses, no Ubers. I'm trying to go the full year. It would be a lot easier to just go to his house that way and we'll take the bus back like I used to. See if I can do it now. I mean, probably not afraid of getting COVID on a bus or anything, but I don't know. Now it's more of a quest, one might say. Anyway, that all being said, I went off on a tangent again. Oh, and by the way, just we had this one place serves a boat of sushi, which I will be showing tonight on the show. A boat of sushi, ironically called the Bon Voyage, which the reason why I'm saying all this. Now I don't know what to get to first. All right. Let me tell you what's happening for the next couple weeks, and then I'll get to what I was going to talk about. So, just with the Nightfly. The Nightfly and me, Dave Jesko, hello. This is our 301st episode. Exciting. Okay, so what am I doing? I'm stalling. Next week, are you fucking kidding me? How did I not just open with this? Next week, next week's Nightfly podcast, 302, will be me and Amy Heckerling. It's a fact. It's a thing. It's happening. It's done. That will be our final broadcast of 2020. And I know it's not called a broadcast technically, but it's much more fun to think of it that way. So that will be our final show of 2020, Ms. Amy fucking Heckerling, if you can fucking believe it, who I've been trying to get, as all of you know, for what's it been, 2 years? I can remember exactly. I don't even know whether I told this, whatever, but I can remember the date she first called me back, and I was going to see the musical Pretty Woman on Broadway, and during intermission, I got the call that she had called, and it has taken. So whenever that came out, I'm going to say it's 2 years ago. It's been this long. And quite frankly, probably helped by the coronavirus because we were able to just Zoom it. Although this will be an audio podcast only. So yes, it's a thing. It's happened. It's a fact. It's that. There it is. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I can't even believe it. It's like so. It's a done deal, and then you know you end the year, and then really. I should just, that's the end of the Nightfly, folks. We just got the person. We get Robbie Rist and then we're done, right? There's nothing else to do. If I didn't like doing the podcast, it would be over. But, you know, I guess I'll go for 500, I guess. Some of the guys told me that Marc Maron has done, you know, way over 300 or 500, 700. I wasn't sure if those guys do because I don't know whether they put it, but they might. Remember, they have sponsors and everything. This is their job, so they could put out two a week and things like that. I mean, obviously, if this is my job, I would do like what Artie did. I would put out four. I'd put one out every day, about four a week probably because, you know, you want to take one day off. But, yeah, I mean, if I had a producer and some sponsors and people that could get stuff together for me, I would put much more out. But, you know, for now, just doing a weekly show, 300 is pretty good, especially not having any sponsors and doing everything by yourself. I think I've done pretty good for myself. And anyway, I'm just so excited about A.B. Heckerling. She's so terrific. And it's funny coming out now that this Patty Jenkins, who, I mean, it's fine. I just keep using her as an example. She directed Wonder Woman and they were making a big stink about, you know, a woman directing this. Is now directing one of the new Star Wars or something. I'm like, big fucking deal. Because you show me, all right, you know what? All right, so you're direct. That's wonderful. A woman is directing an action show or science fiction. That's terrific. But again, you show me a woman that can direct a classic comedy that lasts for 40 fucking years. I'm talking about along the lines of Caddyshack and Groundhog Day. You know, and stuff like that, those classic movies, then show produce that. You know, just unfortunately, comedy is not celebrated, and we're going to talk about that. But it's like, it's ridiculous. I mean, Clueless, you know, whether, you know, maybe it's not a boys comedy, but it really is my favorite movie of all time. I know it's crazy. I make fun of it sometimes, but it is. And because of its just everything about it, just mostly the dialogue, the amazing dialogue. Like, I compared it to Arthur. What we're talking, like, just every line is great. And the, you know, the premise alone. But then you take Fast Times. My God, are you kidding me? I mean, this woman directed a classic, an absolute classic. I haven't seen one woman that's directed a classic of anything. I mean, certainly the first Wonder Woman isn't a classic. We're not going to be talking about it 40 years. I mean, we might be talking about it. We aren't going to talk about how great it was. Maybe Wonder Woman 84. I don't know. Nobody's talking about the Hurt Locker anymore with Catherine Bigelow. I'm just saying, I'm trying to think of an example, and I can't. Amy Heckerling is the shit, and everybody needs to know it. And that is what we talk about next week on the final podcast of the season. Then we are taking a week off, because I didn't take a week off, so I deserve a week off, usually between Christmas and New Year's. Normally on a normal Christmas and New Year's, we take a week off, but I once in a while, I just need a break. And there's no break for my regular show, because I have to figure out the football show season. So there is no break for that, and that takes a lot of my time. And then I think we're starting a brand new talk show on January 5th on YouTube through the Comedy Cellar. So there's no breaks in that way. Believe me, I would love to take a break, but unlike the other stations and people that do their picks, you know, like, oh, it's Friday, we're making our football picks. They don't come on between Christmas and New Year's. I'm like, you know, fuck you guys. Come in and do it at your house and put it on the air. It's completely unacceptable to just, like, give up the last 2 weeks. Pisses me off to no end. So I have to keep it going, whether people are watching or not, just to just keep the structure and the format and see if, can you do all 17 weeks? I think it's the most important thing. Even though it's just so annoying at this point to even make the picks, but it's like, I got to just keep it going. I don't know if I'll ever do it in this format again, but for now, my guests tonight are Sam Morril, musician Colin Smith, and comedian Carmen Lynch. Those are my guests tonight. Next week, my guests are Tom Papa and Greg Rogel. And the week after that, my guests at this time are Scott Aukerman and director David Wayne. And we're waiting on Mr. Paul Rudd. And that would finish out the Comedy Cellar football show season. Not a bad way to go. And obviously, if I have Paul Rudd and Amy Heckerling in a one-month period of time or 1 week surrounding each other, who doesn't love Clueless? How is that not proof then that Clueless is my favorite movie? So embarrassing to say, but I can watch it every time it's on, just like Arthur. I get sick of it for a while, and I go back to it. And it's funny, because I go back and forth, and I'm like, wait, is The Godfather the best? And I'm like, no, I think it is Clueless, and then The Godfather. I don't know. Of course, Notting Hill is in there, but it's funny. I never think of it as the top five, but I like Notting Hill for different reasons, just because mostly for script purposes and how you actually should make how a romantic comedy should be made. I talk about this all the time. That's why, boy, it would be something to get Richard Curtis on the show as well. That could be maybe possible. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, that script itself is, and he didn't direct it. But again, and we've talked about this 100 times, you know, and again, with Clueless, you know, here's a script with amazing supporting characters, and that's what makes an unbelievable movie. Whereas most writers or, you know, directors, but most writers, people who write scripts, just don't concentrate on the supporting characters. They just don't care. It's the main storyline. And then, you know, maybe you get lucky with the best friend character or something. But in Notting Hill, the supporting characters and their background is so rich. It's unbelievable. And then Clueless, really the same thing. Maybe you don't get the richness of the background of the characters, but each supporting character is just as important, and they're all involved. It's really something else. Again, and I praise those kind of things. That's why we like Fast Times so much, because every character in that is interesting. And when you have It's easy to make a story about a lead character. The whole key to writing a really wonderful script is the supporting bunch, you know, which is why how interesting Woody Allen movies always get best supporting actor and actresses nods. I mean, he gets best actor too, but when you get a best supporting actor like more than once, well, you win the prize. Even though Woody Allen hasn't really won. I mean, he's won in life, but now you got to see that new one, Rifkin's Festival. By the way, in a couple of seconds, I'm going to bring in Scotty Gorenstein. You know, we use him for the Oscars all the time. And because Timothy Chalamet, his favorite, was on SNL this past Saturday. So how could we not talk to him for 5 minutes and find out if he thought he did a good job or not? I thought that'd be a really funny thing. In fact, why don't we just do that now? Let's just bring in Scotty and talk to him for 5 minutes, and then we'll go back to what we were going to do. Scotty, thank you very much for coming on today. I know you're a very busy man.
Yes, but when someone says to me, do you want to talk about Timothy Chalamet, I literally stop everything I do.
Chalamet. Oh, my God. I've been calling him the wrong thing. Uh-oh.
And I say, yes, let's talk about Timothy. Absolutely.
Well, that is why when I texted you, I just said, do you want to talk about SNL? Because I was afraid I was going to spell his name wrong, and I thought you'd be upset. So I just said SNL. I knew you'd know what I meant.
No, I don't get upset about that stuff. Not
yes,
at
you
all.
Do. So did you watch live or did you wait for the next? Oh, you were there at 11:30.
Half and half. That's pretty late for me to stay up, but I watched about half and then I watched the second half in the morning.
How were you able to contain yourself? I mean, seriously, I always watch it the next day,
right?
But I don't understand how you knew what did you fall asleep while he was on? I mean,
I must have turned it off at a commercial. And listen, I know I'm going to be watching it in a few hours. You know,
you're going to watch it again.
I have watched a couple things online, not the whole.
Well, what did you think?
Oh, I thought he did great. But can we start at the very beginning and just say, you know, that it's a little odd for anyone to be hosting if they don't have something to plug right now. Now, he was originally, I think when this was all put together, well, I don't know if it was originally, but he had Dune coming out that was supposed to be December 18th.
That's now coming to HBO Max.
Right. I don't know if that's when they pulled it, but it's now October 2021. So we are real far away from now as far as what was supposed to happen. So anyway, you know, Timothy finds himself, you know, hosting with no movie to promote, which is just
I think
part
everybody's in the same boat, I guess.
Right.
But
right.
I guess maybe they had him because, like he said, I didn't know he lived in New York. I didn't know he was from New York. Obviously, you know all this. Yeah, you're making the expression like, what's the matter with you? But I didn't know, you know, his mother worked on SNL. I mean, that was kind of fun. That opening monologue, besides the Pete Davidson horrible stuff, was pretty good.
I mean, wow. How just lovely. And of course, the camera shot on his mom. But he's sort of a famous New Yorker and famous for having lived right in Hell's Kitchen. It's come up, you know, so often.
I didn't realize anybody that pretty lived in Hell's Kitchen, you know.
He's literally the first one, which is why he's getting so much attention. Yeah. Should we just run through a few things? You know, you bring up Pete Davidson, and I wanted to see if you had any opinion of why they paired him with Pete in what I think is three sketches altogether.
I'm only assuming. I really don't know. I can't understand. I mean, that guy Pete he reminds me of my nephew. He seems like he wants to do the little amount of work possible. They usually don't put him in any sketches. I don't know what he's doing there. And he certainly,
well, it's either it's either a Pete Davidson heavy week or you never see him. So. Yeah. This was heavy, but there seemed to be a very cognizant decision to pair the two of them. Although I have to tell you, it doesn't surprise me that they get along.
Yeah,
I kind of get that. Oh, actually, now that I think about it, they have had dinner. I think Pete Davidson was at a famous dinner that Timothy had with Kanye and I think Kid Cudi in LA a while back.
Right, so that, I mean, it makes sense. Wrong. They're about the same age, right?
How old is Pete? I would think Pete Davidson would be a little older at this point, but obviously they're New Yorkers and it doesn't surprise me that they would get along. I'm just surprised that they would sort of, it just seemed very, very like on purpose. Let's write stuff for the two of them. Let's pair them.
What did you think of that?
To create something.
What did you think of that rapper sketch? It was okay.
Well, that was towards the end of the show.
Yeah, towards the end.
I liked it. I thought it was funny. I mean, his closing line was, "Hi, Dad, can you come get us?" I thought it would have been funny if they said, "Hi, Mommy, can you come get us?" Something like that.
Good point. Yeah, that would have been better. But what? But he looked good. He did a good job. He seemed into it. He wasn't one of those actors that was like didn't give a crap.
He did look good, and I was a little concerned because there were the photos that came out as you well know. In that document journal publication about a week ago. And I really think that sometimes he looks way too thin. I thought he looked fine on the show.
I didn't know about these journal photos.
I know, Dave. I was making a joke.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to say. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't stalk him online the way you do. I have other people I stalk.
like, well, I don't call it stalking.
Well, like that handsome guy from Emily in Paris. Have you seen that one?
I have seen Emily in Paris, and I have to tell you a funny story. I said to a dear friend of mine, would I like it? And they said, no. And I did start watching it. I said to the friend, I started watching it. They're like, did you like it? I'm like, I hated it.
But that guy in it is gorgeous. Gabrielle.
Well, I listen, Dave, I don't think about that way with men. I know you do, but you know, I was, when I tune in, I'm just watching for the art.
What are you talking about? Nice try. Well, I just wanted to really just, I know you are busy today, and I just wanted to, you know, just ask you, you know, I knew this was a very exciting weekend for you having him on the show.
Obviously, it was a big deal. And I knew that this day would be coming because Lauren's not stupid. He knows that Timothy is, you know, a ratings grabber. I need, or at least will be all over the internet for this stuff. And I will point out that I was very happy that they had him sing, which was the sketch where they had him singing at that point. Was it Tiny Horse?
Oh, yes, the Tiny Horse sketch.
You know, because a lot of people.
Is he a good singer?
Oh, he's a terrific singer. He's been singing since LaGuardia. Oh, and yeah. I think I've said to you in the past, if somebody wants to print money, put him in a musical on Broadway, they will be printing money. And one day he's going to star in a Broadway musical.
Even if he wasn't in a musical, he's going to make money anyway. He's just one of those people that everybody would come to see because he's adorable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It spans the gap of who goes to Broadway shows.
Yeah. Right.
But I thought he did an okay job. I was just thinking about you the whole time, which was really fun. I wonder if Scotty will like this sketch. I wonder if he'll like his outfit in this.
I thought it was a really good episode. I thought it was an okay.
Well, I mean, you really can't go wrong when Bruce Springsteen is your musical guest. I mean, I don't care for him, but I thought he was good, and I was toe tapping a couple of the songs. But I didn't like, you know. It's so two-faced. The comedy clubs can't be open, and yet there's Springsteen. He's sharing microphones with his band. I mean, with his wife, you can make sense, but it makes you nervous. And it's like, what is? Yeah.
Well, of course, they do tons of testing, but I'm sure you know.
Rapid testing, which doesn't tell anything.
No. I was going to say that, you know, Howard was really going on and on about that this morning, about Springsteen on the show. Oh. At Springsteen's age, it just doesn't make sense, regardless of the testing. Yep. So that's what Howard opened up the show with. I do have one criticism of Timothy and I guess the show. The very end when they threw to Timothy for the group hug and they said, and Timothy says, oh, they told me I have to fill 30 seconds. Yeah. What he really should have done is say, you know, I'm going to hand it over to Bruce, you know,
yeah,
Bruce Springsteen,
point.
one of the great wordsmiths.
And why are you putting
moral
on your mask?
Of our time. Give it to Bruce.
Yeah. And take off your mask. If you're going to say your mask has been off the whole show. Well, you're putting out at the end, take off your mask. You got something prolific to say, and you're absolutely right. Hand it over to Bruce.
Yeah, but okay. So two things there. I mean, they all do keep their masks on at that last moment on the show. It's SNL's way of, you know, telling folks at home, yeah, please wear a mask. So that's about symbolism. But, and, you know, Timothy brought up kindness. Let's all be kind to each other. Nice. In, of course. But you know what? You just had an opportunity to have Bruce Springsteen address the nation during one of the worst periods of our time. Give it to Bruce.
And think about, and folks, this is Scotty Gorenstein telling you, I would like Timothy now, my hero, to hand it over, because I am saying what's best for America. That's a big deal, Scotty. That's a big deal that you're telling your hero to hand it over to America's hero.
Right.
I mean, that's what, and you're right. They got that wrong. He totally should have done that. You're absolutely right. The problem is when Springsteen speaks without music, he sounds kind of like an idiot. So I think that's the issue.
You know what? Even if he, I would have liked the gesture, and anything coming from Springsteen takes, has more oomph. You know what? He could have said it, and you know, I would have loved him for either of them to say, you know, Joe Biden, we're behind you or something like that. Which they could have gotten away with because it was so ad-libbed in that moment.
Yeah, it was odd that it was so ad-libbed. Everything is on cue cards except for some reason Timothy Chalamet's final speech, which they gave to, what is he, 23? They let a 23-year-old...
His birthday's coming up in a couple weeks, as you well know. Yeah, but Dave, you know that was because, you know... time they found themselves with 30 extra
I know
seconds.
But it's odd,
and that happens sometimes
after all the people that are seasoned veterans on that show, where they don't get to say something, they give it to this kid who has, well, you got 30 seconds ago, who's not an improv genius or anything. But I thought he got away with that. I thought he, what he said was
perfectly
out.
Fine.
It just took too long to get out. And it's through his mask. Take off your mask at that point and say something prolific.
Well, they tell them not to take off their mask. Listen, if it was Alanis Morissette, if it was Coldplay, if it was someone else, I wouldn't have thought that. But it was fucking Bruce Springsteen.
And did you see how they were booing him? Boo!
No,
boo.
Dave.
What?
Bruce.
Oh, is that what they were saying?
Oh, come on.
Makes
you're kidding
so much
me, right?
More sense. I thought they were just angry.
Oh, Dave.
Okay. Well, anyway, Scotty, thank you so much for taking this little time.
Anytime. It's always Timothy good to be on this wonderful podcast of yours.
Timothy Shaw. How do you...
Chalamet.
Oh, it is Chalamet.
Yeah.
I thought you pronounced it a different way when we first
Timothy
got on.
Chalamet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well,
Dave, we're
going
to go see Dune together, okay? October 2021, you and I.
Sounds good.
All right.
We'll see Broadway before that, though.
I hope so. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
All right. I'll see you later, Scotty. Be well.
You got it. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
I mean, that kid is a character, man. Doing my Sammy Davis that nobody cares about anymore. I think he likes Timothy Chalamet. I think I'm not positive. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not, no, I'm absolutely positive. Yeah, you know, a lot of interesting stuff with Saturday Night Live this past Saturday too. So, but, Scotty's adorable and a good friend. Now, here's what I wanted to tell you. At the beginning, okay. So it's Monday, December 14th, and today, all the restaurants in the city are shutting down again. No indoor dining again. And quite frankly, and I'm obviously really pissed because I've been going inside to eat. I'm not one of those people that is afraid I'm going to catch the virus indoors. So I go in to eat. I go in to eat to support, and I don't want to eat outside in the cold. I don't like eating outside anyway. In New York City. I don't like eating outside of my mother's house. I don't like picnics. I don't like any of that. I like eating indoors. You sit down like gentlemen and you just eat in a stable atmosphere. But, you know, as you know, I go out every Wednesday for dinner and every Sunday for dinner. And now that's over. The one couple of pleasures I was having during COVID is now over. And it's supposed to get very nasty this week, and this is pretty much the nail in the coffin for probably 50% of the restaurants here in the city. I mean, this is absolutely awful. New Jersey's not closing their restaurants, so I don't understand why this is happening here. I don't think the governor is a great guy like some people think, and people are just pissed off, and I don't think this is necessary. I'm not a conspiracy person. I'm just saying, okay, maybe the virus is spreading, but you cannot close the restaurants, because once the virus doesn't spread anymore, the restaurants will be gone. And then what will be the point of doing any of this if nobody is able to survive financially? Now, all the comedians, I heard there was protesting at the Saturday Night Live show by a lot of the comedy clubs because they're pissed that they're able to do shows indoors and nobody else is. I mean, it is a thing. So that's a disaster, and people are blaming the governor, and why shouldn't you? It's weird that there is, as you know, a two-faced agenda for a lot of things. Thing is, if people feel okay going to a comedy club, I guess they should be able to go. I know it's about spreading the thing, but this thing sucks. And I don't know what's happening with the vaccine or any of that kind of stuff, but I do know that most of these restaurants, and I know a lot of the owners, cannot survive this again. And once again, I've told you, no end game. So if you said, we're going to close the restaurants until January 1st, then we're going to open at full capacity, people would be okay with that if they could plan ahead like that. But there's no exit strategy. We don't know when they're opening again. I feel so bad for my, you know, next door neighbors, and they run this wonderful restaurant. And, you know, he specifically told me I will not be able to handle another shutdown. I know they can serve outside and they have takeout and to go, but some of these restaurants are made for that. And I will tell you the example, and I told that on my show, on the Tuesday show last week. Our friend Steve Cunningham and our friend Irene Bremis from Turbocharge had to close their restaurant down on Bleecker Street, Fiore's, which I've said for the past couple of years, I felt, and again, personal choice, it was the best pizza in New York City. For me, it was a fact. The best pizza in New York City. He was concentrated on the sauce. I liked the concentration on the sauce. And it was delicious. It wasn't a thin crust, but it was a thinner crust, which I like. And it was amazing. And he had to close thanks to this stupid virus that's just fucking up everybody. And he finally had to close. You know why he had to close? Because he has a pizza place. Now, most pizza places really haven't had to close because a pizza place is made for takeout and delivery. So, and mostly delivery. A pizza place throughout the century has been always a delivery thing. So they can survive on delivery. But not a place that gets a place to be in the West Village on Bleecker Street in New York City. You're not opening that place to deliver and maybe, I guess, takeout, but not really takeout. That is a slice place. That is a place where people congregate in the busy West Village that stays open till 5 in the morning after the bars close. You definitely want pizza where you get two slices and a 40 for $10. That is the kind of place. And that the Super Bowl isn't your biggest day of the year to make your rent. Halloween is. So it all was based on outdoor trafficking and the busy, busy West Village and NYU students. And none of that is a thing. There was no Halloween. NYU is gone. The children are gone. They're not at school. He had to close. This is a restaurant that was named after one of the firefighters, Mike Fiore, who died in 9/11. And he did a tribute restaurant to a fallen hero. A great guy, because I met you know, his family and everything. And, you know, I wore that shirt opening for Gaffigan, the Fiore shirt with Mike Fiore and the pizza place on the, I mean, I love it. Irene said there's a couple other shirts. I mean, okay, granted, it fits me well. It looks good on me as a short sleeve shirt, which is very rare. But I wore it proud. I looked like a firefighter in it. People would be like, oh, are you with the fire department? I'm like, oh, yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, I just wore it really proud. I like, you know, his family. I met his wife and his kids. This is a nice guy. And Steve, of course, is the best. And, you know, you name the guy. We have the pictures outside with all the firefighters. Every year we'd have the party. and Steve would give back and just have free pizza and beer for everybody. What is Dave Juskow not going to appreciate a store like that? Are you kidding me? And it had to close because of this. That's so funny. I'm watching my neighbor walk her dog. I see her all the time. I call her up and I'm like, what the hell's going on here? I watch her right outside the window. I usually call her now and be like, hey, I thought you were going, you know, we're going out today, whatever. It's really funny when you can actually see her walking the dog. Or sometimes I see her in the TJ Maxx across the street. I'm like, will you bring your dog into the TJ? She's like, how could you possibly know that? Are you spying on me? I'm like, no, I'm just looking out the window. I recognize your dog. And then I know it's you. Anyway. Yeah, this sucks. Not only was the pizza great, the idea was great, and now it's gone forever. And he was so upset, and this closed last Sunday. And it is one of the worst things that's happened from another casualty of the virus, and it's really sad, and it's never coming back. And he's distraught over it. He not only did he enjoy running that place, but he... Again, you don't see a lot of restaurants that are that named something after it for somebody for a good cause. There was, you know, picture. I mean, it was really a good New York City thing. Again, giving tribute to firefighters. You know, there was a picture of them on the wall where it explained what happened and all that kind of stuff. It meant something. You come in there drunk one night and you're visiting the West Village and you see it. You know, it gives you a reminder of what happened on September 11th and stuff, which normally I don't want. But in this case, you know, they didn't make it sad. They just said, here's what we're doing. Whatever. I mean, it's just really sad. I don't know. I mean, will New York City survive? Probably, because after it all goes away and everything goes back and they'll build new restaurants and all that stuff. And I guess it'll always be working, but it's sad because, you know, I know a lot of these owners, and what are they going to do? Here's another sad thing, as long as we're just harping on this. You know, I'm thinking to myself, I'm playing the Vince Guaraldi today, right? And I'm like, well, let me play the, you know, and we talked about it at the beginning. I'm like, oh, let me play the Adam Schlesinger Monkees Christmas album. I'm like, well, now I don't want to play that one. Let alone, I don't know if you remember the podcast from a year ago? Last Christmas when we had him on, was that a year ago or 2 years ago? I can't remember. I think it was just last year. I don't know. When we had Adam Schlesinger on and we went over track by track in the Monkees Christmas album, I was going to play one of those songs. I'm like, I don't want to play that again because I don't want to get sad. And then I gave him a copy, a picture disc of the Vince Guaraldi Charlie Brown Christmas album, which I told him, I was like, this was the best album, you know, until you came up with it. And I gave him copy of it. I'm like, now I can't play anything anymore. That doesn't remind me of this wonderful guy who died of the coronavirus. Man, I hate you, coronavirus. I hope you burn in hell. Yeah. I know y'all feel similar. I mean, it's just so messed up. And I can't even get a test. I went down to get tested. They're like, you got to get here at like 7 in the morning. And I'm like, what? There's a 7 a.m. now? I'm like, do I really want to wake up, set my alarm, wait online for an hour just for a test? I don't have any symptoms or anything. And I'm like, fuck this. So then I tried to get a test at CVS, like make an appointment, you know, and get a test. So I know I was going to be in Jersey. I get a test. I filled out all the paperwork. They're like, you don't qualify for a test. I'm like, I don't qualify for a test? The hell does that mean? Because I don't have any symptoms. I'm like, well, that's, I could still be asymptomatic and spreading it around. So I'd like to get a test, whether it's rapid or whatever, even though I don't trust those rapid ones. But, I mean, this is just silly. I mean, now it's, and I, you know, I mean, I need a test. I went to Hanukkah and I see my family. Of course, they don't care. So it doesn't matter. My nieces are coming from college. Nobody cares. I mean, we just don't care in this family. So I'm glad they don't care. I'm sure other people care. And I go to restaurants, but they're all doing stuff too. So I guess we're all doomed. My mother doesn't care. But what about your mother? She doesn't give a shit. She doesn't care. And if that's the way she goes out, then so be it, I guess. That's the way she feels. So we went home for Hanukkah on Saturday, you know. So I had such a busy day. So Friday night, I made my sweet and sour meatballs, you know, for the family. I told them I'd make some because my sister's getting sick of tired of me not doing anything. But I'm like, all right, fine. So I'll cook something too. I made the sweet and sour meatballs. They were a big hit, thank God. Now I got two things that Billy likes, sweet and sour meatballs and the matzo lasagna. So thank goodness, right? Made 2 pounds of it, doubled the recipe. I was nervous about doubling the recipe. Double the recipe, you don't know how it's going to happen. Still, though, the meatballs are still, you know, they like them a lot. The sauce is amazing, but I still can't. I got to get the meatballs tasting less like meatballs. But that's why sometimes I don't like meatballs, because they just taste like meatballs. But they're all covered in sauce. That's why we all like meatballs. I need to, inject the meatballs with some flavor, I think. And then you'd have really something else. But maybe you don't need that because you have the sweet and sour sauce on the side. So I don't know. Everybody loved them. And they're tiny. They're like cocktail meatballs. I like that best. Than those big, I mean, sometimes I like those big ones, you know, like when I'm spaghetti and meatballs, but the cocktail meatballs are the best. And that's where usually I serve it with rice, and the sauce and the rice is delicious. Anyway, so I had to get to my mother's 2 hours early to peel 15 pounds of potatoes. That was my job. I had to get them all ready so when Matt comes, he can start cooking. Then we leave the kitchen. But I also wanted to go to Target and buy a bunch of stuff, and I cannot believe how productive Target was for me this past Saturday. It was fantastic. I went to Target I left my house at 9 a.m. I was at Target by 10, and it was so productive. I still can't even get over how productive it was. Like, I forgot my list at home. I had this list that I was going to get at Target for a week, and I knew I was going to forget it. I had it right on top of my wallet, and when I was in the car on the FDR drive, I'm like, I forgot that fucking list. And then I couldn't believe it. I remembered everything on the list. Like when I got home and I'm like, oh my God, I remembered everything. It's a miracle. And I got everything on my list. I can't believe it, including envelopes to send out the tote bags. I know I keep saying I'm going to send it, but I am going to do it. I was going to get envelopes, but I got this thing that like kind of, it's like gift wrapping and it just kind of seals itself and covers it up. I mean, this is something that you'll tell me, you know, if you're on the Maggie level, if you haven't gotten it, then we'll know. And, you know, who cares? I'll send you another one. You know, it's not a big deal if this doesn't work the right way. But I think the packaging is interesting. And then I just got to get some shipping labels and it'll be done. Bring it down to the post office, send it out. Although I think, like I said, Liz is going to handle some of that for me. So anyway, I'll be getting your information so I can send them out. They're ready to go now. Christmas tote bags. You're welcome. They're awesome, though. I'm telling you, I don't know if I'd walk around with them, but the idea of them is just as hilarious as you'd want it to be. The actual tote bag itself is as good as the idea. I cannot deny it. It's really funny. So, anywho, what the hell was I saying? So we go down right. So I got everything I wanted at Target. I was very pleased. And then even got, you know, all the lottery tickets I needed and everything, because that's what I'm good for that day. I also was able to buy the kids gifts. I know, I don't have any money, right? And my sister's mad. I gave them, my nieces, $100, like Liza and Billy, $100 American Express gift cards. And my sister was angry. I'm like, well, you know what? Even though I don't have any money, if I can't give my nieces and nephew like something good that they're like, wow, our uncle, you know what I'm saying? What, I got to be that guy? I got to be like the worst uncle ever that is like, oh, well, you know how it is, kids. I don't know. I know that's not the, I feel like I'm not the mother in Saturday Night Fever. It's like, as long as anybody's working, we eat good in this house. I guess I am that guy, but I shouldn't be doing it. But well, come on, what am I going to do? Meanwhile, so angry I did it. Liza left it at my mother's. She didn't give a shit. Billy doesn't care. I don't even know why I bothered. The only thing that was good is I got Doria that new Harry Potter pop-up book, and she's easy to shop for. You just buy her something Peter Pan, Harry Potter, or something else oriented, and you're good to go. And she doesn't care about money. She doesn't use any. She probably has like $100,000 tied up in her bank from all the babysitting and never going out and not drinking. So I don't worry about her getting money. I know Liza likes money, but she left it at the house, which is such an insult. crap. It really drives me crazy. So these rotten kids, listen to this, right? It's my sister and Matt's 25th anniversary, their 25th wedding anniversary. It's a goddamn miracle, right? So I was making fun of them, and I said that they have to perform for us because that's what me and my sister had to do for our parents' 25th anniversary. And let me tell you something, and I know I've mentioned this before. We had to perform in front of all of their friends and relatives, you know, at it was at a what do you call, not a country club, certainly not a country club, a health club, just a health club, a tennis club in Woodbridge, New Jersey. And they, you know, rented it out for Saturday night and we were all able to play tennis and stuff. It was actually a great idea. But then my sister and I had to perform and anybody that was there was just like, oh, we had to sit through David and Beth performing. It was awful. And it was awful because I had to do stand up and I'm still doing the same material now. So I wish I was kidding. And you know, I was awful. And then we had to sing and do a dance number. I'm telling you, it was so messed up, but it was expected and we did it. And so then I was making fun of the kids. I'm like, you have to do a show because we had to do it. Sorry. So, you know, I mean, I think that's funny that they have to go and they don't find it funny at all. But what do they have to do it in front of? Me and my mother? That's it. They didn't have to do it in front of relatives and family and friends. I mean, you know, it's such an easy thing. So, and what am I saying? I'm saying, you know, my sister was like all on board with it and she really wanted them to do something. She was totally into it. And we're just talking to acknowledge your parents' 25th wedding anniversary. You could do something. I don't think they got them any gifts or anything. So we're talking about a staged reading or something. I don't know. I mean, we want them to do a music. There's no reason why Billy shouldn't be doing a musical number. And we're talking about just singing something from Dear Evan Hansen or something. My God, he's the performer. What the fuck? Just like that, how could I not, if my mother asked me to do stand-up comedy, how could I not do it if I'm trying to be a stand-up comic at the time? What kind of dick would I be? You can understand if Dory and Liza don't want to do it, but maybe they can do something. They can help Billy. They can clap their hands. So it would have been like something put together. Meanwhile, these kids put together the worst thing ever. It was like they put together a PowerPoint presentation, but it wasn't even, how can I describe it? It was awful. They were like, what cartoon characters would Mommy and Daddy be? Or whatever. It was absolutely awful. Billy went first and he clearly put it together that day and it was just awful. And then Liza was even worse. And Dory's was good because Dory, for some reason, was animated and into it. So hers came off okay. So if one of the kids did that, it would have been fine. But all three doing it, it was a bore fest. And I'm pretty sure my sister was pretty pissed off. And I will only tell you this because, well, she told me she was pretty pissed off. Like, we went over to Aunt Judy's to deliver her gifts. So I got her the funniest gifts. I got her a Magda dreidel set, you know, Make America Great Again dreidel set, which she now has in the refrigerator. I mean, as soon as I saw it on Amazon, I'm like, hello, click to cart, perfect gift for Aunt Judy. We're walking over there. She goes, oh, rotten kids, you know. I mean, it was like no effort put into it whatsoever. There were PowerPoint presentations. I put more PowerPoint presentation into my show on a weekly basis. And I'm an old man and they're using shitty PowerPoint. Like, you know, when I put together that football card that I make the picks, do you know how long that takes me to do where I can press the button and the logos spin around and come out? Do you know how long that takes me every week? I'm putting more effort into my show than they put into their parents' 25th. Well, that's probably the way it should be. But that being said, I mean, there was no fun animation to it. There was nothing. And quite frankly, we would have been better off with them just putting together a thing we would have watched on TV, which they totally could have gotten away with, and not saying anything live. You would have been better off just putting together some sort of video presentation. It was really lame. And I'm like, God, I really dislike those kids. You know, they're just so, you know, it's like, you know, Billy's trying to be an actor, but it's like, what? I'm not, you know, he's going to get something. I'm telling you, he's going to get something. He keeps getting called back. He's good when he's doing it. He's just so lazy about it. And that's the only thing that bothers me. He's totally going to get something. It's so obvious. He's going to get like a series. And he's going to be in L.A. And he's going to be, I mean, it's just so obvious to everybody. Because it's a, you know, it's a thorn in my side to me. Like, I'm like, this kid gets serious. And he's not, because that's the way to do it. That's the way I should have done it. Just been like, yeah, I guess. Hey, you want to audition for this? Yeah, sure. He's like the Mike Damone of acting. Yeah, sure, whatever. I mean, if my sister didn't hook everything up for him, he would just be sitting at home living in a van. I mean, seriously, he'd be doing nothing. He would never. So if it's not for my sister, he ain't going to do anything, but he'll do the work when it comes. Yeah, sure, if it's easy. Yeah. Hey, Billy, you got the part. Hey, great. I mean, I've never even seen him get excited about it. Hey, all right. Hey, Billy, you're going to make some money. You got to go to the city today and record. Hey, all right. I mean, I don't even think he gives a shit. If my sister wasn't involved, he would not have a... And, it, you know, it kills me because I was by myself. You know, like, I was just trying to do everything on my own. You know, he's got, like, a manager and an agent already. I don't... Oh, God, my manager sucks so much. But, you know, it's just bothersome because he just doesn't care. So it's like, you know, I have to take my mother's furniture downstairs for the winter. And it was all there. And Beth goes, well, let Billy do it. I'm like, yeah, it's a good idea. What the hell am I doing? I mean, this is what I used to have to do for my grandmother and everything all these years. He's like, oh, man. And of course, you get it. Oh, man. But then he was like fiddling with the stuff upstairs. Like he's dropping. And he's like, oh, this is really hard. And I'm like, oh, my God. He's so obvious. I used to do the exact same thing to my dad when he used to make me do stuff. Because it's like you just don't want to be asked to do it anymore. But this is your grandmother. And with your grandmother, you shouldn't be doing that stuff. And I'm not his father, so, you know, just do it the right way. But he's like, he just keeps dropping stuff and falling. He's so stupid. It's really annoying sometimes. And then he got mad because I have these lottery tickets, right? But he's like, he scratches them off and then just leaves them and doesn't concentrate. And then when we go through the pile of losers, because I don't trust any of the kids, we find that he's won. But he doesn't care. So I said, on Thanksgiving, I said, by the way, you have a lifetime ban because you stink at these. And he goes, no, I don't. Give me another chance. I said, okay. So I gave him another chance. Did the exact same thing. Left it. It was $15. I found that in the loser pile. Dory, I said, Dory, check these over. I don't trust him for a minute. I said it in front of him. It wasn't like it was. And we found that he won. And I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. All right. You're banned for life for lottery tickets, right? And I think if you're a human being, you say to yourself, yeah, you got me. Yeah, I suck at this. So then I bought the lottery ticket. I said, no, it's just for the girls. You have a lifetime ban now. And he got so angry. Why? Why do I have a lifetime ban? And he ran out. This is an 18-year-old kid, mind you. And believe me, I'm only saying it because I would have done the same thing. This is the way I act. But, you know, what do you mean why? You stink at this. You don't even want to do it. You scratch it and then you walk away. You're not even paying attention. Why are you even interested in doing this? Clearly, this doesn't interest you. I don't understand the mentality. I can't figure it out. And then I gave him the envelope with the $100 thing, and he just, thanks a lot. And he didn't even open it. I don't understand. I mean, yeah, this is old man shit. How do you not understand? Like Liza understands her lifetime ban from the podcast. She gets it. She doesn't give a shit. She understands at least, even if she gave a shit. And of course, I would let her do it again. But if she gave a shit at all, but I mean, she totally understands why she's banned. She's fallen asleep on the podcast twice. Now, meanwhile, on the other flip side of that, we've been taping the ones with her at 11 o'clock at night. I'm sure if we did it on a normal day, she'd be a lot of fun. And I mean, there's nothing funnier than her last appearance on one of the Thanksgivings where she goes, fine, you can ban me. I mean, that's hilarious. But if you tell somebody they have a ban, you give them another chance to prove themselves, and then they do it again, how are you not just saying, fine? I mean, you know I'm not going to lifetime ban you from scratching goddamn lottery tickets. But when you act like that, I mean, that's insane. You know, I even looked at Beth. I'm like, it's just, I'm banning him, but I'm kind of kidding. You know, if he just said, like, in Thanksgiving, no, give me another chance, of course I'd let him. What are you kidding me? He can go get his own tickets anyway if he wants to. It's so stupid. When we were watching the PowerPoint, my sister goes, oh my God, David's podcast is going to be amazing this week. Right. You got that right.
I think there must be something wrong with me, Linus. Christmas is coming, but I'm not happy. I don't feel the way I'm supposed to feel. I just don't understand Christmas, I guess. I like getting presents and sending Christmas cards and decorating trees and all that, but I'm still not happy. I always end up feeling depressed.
Charlie Brown, you're the only person I know who can take a wonderful season like Christmas and turn it into a problem.
Maybe Lucy's right. Of all the Charlie Browns in the world, you're the Charlie Browniest.
Just like me. I'm the Charlie Browniest. Out of all the Dave Juskas in the world, you are the David Juskiest. Juskowiest. So, I'm playing this album. You know, I told Alexa to play this album while we were eating. And everybody's enjoying it because it's mostly jazz music. But then, like, either this one or O Tannenbaum comes on or something. Christ, it's so funny. We're all just not paying attention to music. And all of a sudden, you know, when they mention Jesus or something, what, I can't remember what song it was in this album. Like, maybe it was the Christmas song. And my mother goes, what the hell are we listening to? Like, it was amazing. Like, she immediately heard a bad sound and a bad, like a Christmas-themed thing. And she's like, what the hell is this? It was really funny. She just picked up on it right away, and we skipped the song. But I can't remember which one it was. Because normally this, I mean, this, you know, she's listening to this. She's like, oh, hey, groovy. But then as soon as, like, oh, Christmas tree, she's like, what the hell? It's funny how that just, like, immediately resonated with her, like, not even paying attention. And then all of a sudden, what the hell? And then my, you know, it's just like, Dave, what the hell? Matt's even like, David, Alexa, skip, get off fat, get off fat. And it goes all the way up to the, wait, what was it? It goes all the way up to the, damn it, it goes all the way up to the Senate. Did he just call me a big fat pig? I believe he did, sir. Wait, what is it? It goes all the way up to the, what is he called? The Emperor? I think, does he say the Emperor? I can't remember. It starts in the first. It starts in the second. Did he just call me a big fat pig? I believe he did, sir. Christmas Day! Oh. I think I almost hit that note. Oh, by the way, I've been watching the Flight Attendant, you know, with Kelly Cuoco. However you pronounce her goddamn name. That's one of those people like me. I mean, what do you care if we mispronounce your name? It's stupid. It should be Kelly Cuckoo. It's Cuckoo. You mean, why, you know, people say David Jusko. I'm like, not going to pronounce. I'm like, unless they say, how is it pronounced? What do I care? You call me whatever you want. What do I give a shit if I'm not going to see you ever again? I mean, if they mispronounce it like on a TV show, if they're introducing me, maybe I'll get upset. Maybe just meet somebody in person and you got a crazy name, which I don't think mine's that crazy, but hers is. Why don't you shut up? Anyway, the Flight Attendant, I watched the first two episodes. I'm not enjoying it. It's like one of those things where it's annoying. You know, it's like everything she does is getting on your nerves. And you tell me if you feel similar if you see it. So far, it's really bothering me. I'm hoping it's going to get better. There's much more episodes than I thought. I thought it was like five episodes. But so far, it's really frustrating. I mean, she's still really pretty, so I'll just watch it anyway. But yeah, I'm not enjoying it as much as I enjoyed Dash and Lily, which is the stupidest show, but it was all right. It was only like seven episodes. It was easy, a half hour piece, right? And yeah, I think that. And I started watching the third season of The Crown because I'm trying to get to the fourth season, which looks really fun. So I'm kind of going through. I mean, it's still entertaining, so. But, you know, we're all looking for stuff to watch, so I'm just keeping you posted. I'm waiting for Wonder Woman 84. I'm very excited. I mean, it sounds like it'll be fun. How can it not be fun? Come on. Hey. Oh. I was mad at my friend Elon. I've been mad at, you know, I've been really going through, which maybe everybody has with my friends, and not the disrespect that I've been getting on the show. You know, Rachel and I aren't talking at this point, and we will again, but she's going through something, and so I was mad at my friend Elon Altman because he traveled yesterday. And, you know, again, the two-faced, like, oh, I'm afraid of the COVID. And I'm like, well, I'm going to Florida. And he was going during when we do the stupid Sunday show that has no views and it doesn't matter. And I get angry. And he sent me some donuts on Wednesday. and to try and make up for it, which was really nice. But I'm like, dude, I'm trying to diet. Sending me donuts on the weekdays isn't helping. If you send me Sunday morning, that's a different story. I always have donuts on Sunday morning. But he sent me a box, a dozen donuts. I'm like, I gave like five of them to the doorman. And then, you know, I ate like five of them. God damn it, because they were there. I'm like, dude, this is not helpful. I need to back off the donuts, please. But that's why I was like, I did. Plus, oh, my God. Let me tell you something. I got to tell you something about myself for a second. I mean, I know I talk about this all the time, but I got a problem. And I don't know whether it's coronavirus or that, or this is the thing. But I'm telling you, I know this is a problem. And we talk about it on the podcast all the time. I cannot, when somebody changes plans on me, I am an absolute mess. I cannot handle the change in plans. I get so excited, and I know we've talked about this before, but it's happened a lot lately. And I was supposed to go over the first night of Hanukkah, my friend Alina, and this guy outside, Steve, from the cellar, and he called. He goes, oh, I can't make it. I'm going to stay here. And it's like we only made that date because he was available. So it was like, I can't make it. And I got so depressed. I'm serious. When these things happen, I can't handle it. And I got to figure out a way to do it. But I think with COVID is the fact that there's so nothing else to do. And being alone, single, not usually seeing anybody. I think when I have scheduled events, let alone going off the diet on those days, because I know I'm maybe going to eat something nice, I think it's affecting my mind. And I get so excited for those days. And it's so serious that when the plans are derailed, I get almost suicidal. Like, I can't handle it anymore. That's how bad it is. It's really bad. And Rachel is so stupid. She was making fun of it the other day or something. Like, she didn't think it was like a real thing, but she doesn't understand and she's way off base on everything. So we'll work it out again in the future. But right now, I got to give her some time. I don't know what her story is, but yeah, I mean, I know I'm crazy. It's just I got to be an adult. It's an embarrassment. It's like I'm a child. Like I have a tantrum. I mean, I just hang up the phone and deal with it myself. But I don't want to yell at anybody. But I just get too excited. And along with the diet, because I'm like, you know, if you tell me at Thursday and I got plans on Thursday, then I'm like, well, I guess I'll go on the diet Thursday. Then it's like extra depressing because I was like, I didn't want to eat this food this week. I was looking forward to eating something delicious. That's what it comes down to, too. That's why I've been stuffing myself. Memo and I went crazy yesterday at the sushi place because also it was the last day. It was the last day we could eat there. And, you know, it's like I'm off my diet for the day. So I don't know whether it's working. It's working to lose weight, but then what am I losing weight for? I'm not seeing anybody. You know, nobody's dressing up in skinny clothing. I'm not going on stage. Why am I dieting now? But again, I don't even know what to tell you. It's so messed up. I'm messed up. Let me tell you, and I'm sure a lot of you are feeling this way. I mean, it's just this virus, and it just won't go away. And it's been almost a year. And it just, there's like no end. I know they have a vaccine, but if they have a vaccine, then why can't we just spread it around and, you know, just have a, you know, really spike it up and then, you know, get the vaccine and take our chances. I mean, this blows. Christmas is canceled. New Year's is definitely canceled. That's actually a good thing. I don't have to feel bad about not going out on New Year's, so that's actually a help. But this is just really, really bad. Now, the last thing I'd like to talk about today, and you know what? This time maybe I can play the music in the background. Let's see if we can put this together here where I won't get distracted. Why not, right? What I'd like to talk about today is richest actors. Yeah, I know this is ridiculous, but when you find out, and I don't think you know, who number one is, you will be like me where I'm sitting in my bed at 5 in the morning, just, you know, it's one of those sites where you're like, who are the richest actors? You know, and I'm like, let me take a look at this. I'm like, yeah, obvious, obvious, obvious. Number one will blow your mind. I was like, oh my God, I have to talk about that on the podcast. And then you're also like, and the second story, you're like, who would care? I'm like, no, the Nightfly listeners will care. So it just starts out with Leonardo DiCaprio, which was surprising because he's at 22. I would have thought he would have been number one. And then it goes to some Australian. Then Brad Pitt. Robert Downey Jr. These are the people you expect. But Robert Downey Jr. is 19. With all his Marvel money, right? Wouldn't you have thought he was number one? You thought it would be somebody very logical. Jessica Alba at 18. That's a miracle. She's amazing. And it's that health line or whatever. I mean, she's so cool. I mean, if she's promoting beauty products and she still looks like this, and I think she's in her 40s, yeah, she wins. I mean, she's amazing. She's terrific. She really is great. Sean Connery, which now doesn't count anymore, but he's at 17. Then Will Smith. All of this makes sense. Keanu Reeves at 15. He probably, you know, jumped up in the standings since John Wick, the name I couldn't remember last week. What an embarrassment. I was listening back. Jackie Chan. Makes sense. Clint Eastwood. A lifetime. You know, I mean, Clint Eastwood's in his almost 90. That would make sense. If he's not on this list, he's done something horribly wrong. I wonder if we'll be back to normal next year. And I wonder if Scotty Gornstein is queer. I couldn't think of anything to rhyme. It was that piano accompaniment. I couldn't help myself but to start singing. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Again, all of this makes sense. Worth $400 million. Whatever. We figure that stuff. Sylvester Stallone. Here's number 10. Who the hell knows? It's an Indian guy. A politician and broadcaster. You know, that's what happens. Adam Sandler at number 9. Makes perfect sense for all of us. Mel Gibson, even though we don't want to know about him anymore, makes sense. Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen at number 7. They are worth $500 million. And when they say, come on, why don't you guys want to be in Fuller House? They're like, maybe you didn't hear. We're the number 7 richest actors in the world. We're worth $500 million. We don't need your stupid, stupid show. Robert De Niro. Right, we know about him and his stupid investing. And then, of course, what I expected to be number one, George Clooney. I don't know why he's worth so much money, but, you know, we just kind of know, even though we don't know where he made his money. I mean, it was in movies, but he just seems like he would have a lot of money, right? I mean, nobody has that kind of confidence. You don't have that kind of money. Simon Cowell. Makes sense. Nobody wants him to be on that list, but he is. And then Tom Cruise. At number 3, I thought he would have been number 1. Tom Cruise, worth $570 million. And he has probably, that's probably a lifetime of movie making. And even though he's probably not worth anything if he was to leave the, you know, what is that? Shit. So bad with the, you know, that horrible cult he's in. That writer. I know you know what it is. Oh, this is the John Wick thing all over again. I'm going to remember the new year, and it's going to drive me crazy. Oh, my God. Everybody knows what it is. All right. Sorry, everybody, because I know you're screaming it. It's this. Oh, my God. Well, sometimes my brain isn't thinking right. So that's number 3, and I thought he would have been number 1, you know, as far as actors or whatever go, and the highest grossing actor or the richest. And number 2 is an Indian star, so I don't know him. He's the king of Bollywood. His name is Shah Rukh Khan. His name is Shah Rukh Khan. It's almost like that. But he, okay, makes sense. We don't know who would be above Tom Cruise, you know? Some Indian guy we never heard of from Bollywood. Makes sense. You know those Bollywood movies, there's a lot of money to be made. There are a lot of people in India. Here's number 1. I was waiting for the music to change. Let's see what comes up next. It'd be fun if it was something exciting. What the hell? Is it over? Is that the end of the album? Oh, here we go. Oh, this is what we played at the beginning. It's not really the build-up we wanted, number 1. All right, but here's number 1, right? I think I'm going to turn the music off for it because... It's not what we were looking for in the thing. But, okay, number 1. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down? Have you had enough to eat? It's Jamie Gertz. Yeah, Jamie Gertz, who's, you know, the third supporting character in this scene.
Where are you, Jay? Jay, can you stop loving me?
Leave me alone.
Do that.
Yes, you do.
I know. Come on.
Try. Try. Help me, please.
Oh,
come on,
shit.
You guys, I'm your prom queen. Trace, you guys, I'm serious. Come on, I need help.
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to do.
What's the problem?
Several things.
Okay, we'll help you. Well,
no problem. Don't go away, girl and baby.
You promise you won't get mad?
No, I love you.
Okay, close your eyes.
Stop.
No.
I don't know how to thank you enough.
My pleasure.
The girl says, don't go away, Carolyn, baby, and asks for the scalpel. She says, scalpel. That girl is worth, what is it? $3 billion. Sorry. I was just making sure my eyes saw the right thing. Jamie Gertz, the 80s actress who's in that movie, Less Than Zero. She plays the telephone sexy girl in Seinfeld and a couple other things we know. Maybe she was in a sitcom or two. I'm sorry, $3 billion. That eclipses even the Indian guy who has $620 million by, I don't know, $2 billion. Jamie Gertz married this guy in 1989, Tony Ressler, who formed the this company, Ars Management or whatever. Like, you know, he funded a hedge fund and all that kind of stuff. And yes, okay, so you're saying it's by marriage. Oh, that makes sense. But no, they did this together. He wasn't this guy when she married him, and she helped form this company, and now he owns the Atlanta Hawks and has a controlling interest in the Milwaukee Brewers, and they are worth $3 billion. And just, I mean, he's exactly like my cousin. You know, they own a couple of sporting teams, and there are minority owners in other teams. I mean, Jamie goddamn Gertz was number one. If that threw me off for an unbelievable loop that I was not expecting. And apparently they're very nice. They give a lot to charity, and they're very good Hebrews, which, of course, you always like to hear. Just like David Blitzer. Classic. But she still looks good, and they've been happily married since 1989. Just like David Blitzer. Look at that. It's funny with those rich people, huh? But the wives stay good-looking and skinny, and as sexist as that sounds, I just bring up the guy, again, who I can never forget, who invented the Big Bang Theory, not the TV show, the actual theory itself, and won the Nobel Prize, the Mr. Arno Penzias, who, of course, left his wife because she didn't give a shit. And his life changed, and he's like, he's still going to look like, is that the way you're going out? We're wealthy now, and we're bigwigs. Yeah, you got a problem with this? Hey, I don't change for nobody. So he left her. He found somebody else. I mean, even age appropriate. It wasn't any younger. It just somebody that was going to come along for the ride. And this woman is still angry. And when, who was it? My mother danced with Arno Penzias at his daughter's wedding. She was still angry at my mother for doing that. And that's 20 or 25 or maybe 30 years later. Man, that's bitterness. But it's kind of also on you. Yes, he did leave you, and that ain't cool. But it's not like you did anything to help go it along. I know that sounds horrible. But sometimes, you know, you got to change together. And if the other person is along for the ride, whether it's a woman who comes into money and the man doesn't change too, it'll happen the opposite way as well. Just happens more often the other way for now. But we're all working on it, am I right? You damn straight I am. Well, folks, that's the show for today. I hope everybody has a happy holiday. Happy Hanukkah, by the way. And I hope everybody has a wonderful holiday next week. Oh, my God, the last podcast of the year. We are going out in style. My guest will be the amazing Amy Heckerling. Yes, the director of Fast Times at Ridgemont High and the writer and director of Dave Juskow's favorite movie of all time, Clueless. And wow. And very exciting for all of us here at the Nightfly. And I don't know, I can't even believe we're ending the season with that. That's a great way to go out. Hopefully in January, we'll be back on January 5th, on Tuesday, January 5th. Hopefully we'll go out with a bang, and we'll come back with a bang as well. And we will get 2020 out of our systems and get into 2021, and even though I think 2021's a wash too, and we'll just wait for 2022 together on the Nightfly Podcast, everybody. Hello, I'm Dave Juskow. Anyway, I really just hope everybody has a great rest of your year. And thanks again for your support this season, as they say in PBS. And seriously, and thank you for supporting me and this show. And I do appreciate it. That don't forget, of course, we still have the few Comedy Cellar football shows left. That'll still be on every Tuesday night at 8. But in January, probably move to 7 o'clock. But that is our show. And I don't know. I guess I can just... I'm not stalling or anything. I just want to wish you a really... I just want to make sure when I sign off, I hope I get out everything I had to say today. And I'll just see everybody next year. We'll talk about the Amy Heckerling interview on the flip side of the calendar. That is the show for this week and this year, as we call it a 2020, a wrap, thank God. Anyway, hope everybody has a great holiday season, and I'll see you in 2021. Good night, everybody. I am Dave Juskow, forever the Nightfly. Good night, everybody.